Hey everyone, welcome back to Seeking What They Saw. I'm here with Alyssa Truman, and this is someone we've wanted to have on for a while because she has been in a position at the General Conference and communicating with us actually at the podcast and coming up with some different ideas and things that we can do. In fact, she was the one that invited, so if any of you are upset that we got to go to the General Conference, me and Jesse and Anthony, you've got to go blame her because she allowed us to, she invited us there. She said, hey, you know what? You guys want to come in as media and come in. She's the one that gave us the freedom to do that. So Alyssa, first off, thank you for letting us into that world. We honestly were shocked when you reached out to us and were like, hey, we're going to invite some podcasts to come into the next General Conference session and be a part of that in a unique way. So first off, before I even get started on that, Alyssa, just share with us your background at the GC. In fact, I was going to try to introduce you and what your position was before the GC, but your name is so complicated and long. I know Jesse would have nailed it, but I'm not usually the one that introduces the guests in that way. So I'm going to let you tell me really quick, what was your previous position before this General Conference session just had? So what was the title?
Hey, thanks for having me, Sean. So my title is Assistant Director of the Communication Department of the General Conference of Seventh-day Adventists. So most people just feel like you're the Assistant Director of Communication, but the official title would be Assistant Director of the Communication Department of the General Conference of Seventh-day Adventists.
Yeah. So what did you primarily do and how long did you do it for? When did you inherit, or maybe that's the wrong word, inherit? When were you appointed to that position and how long did you hold that position?
Great question. So it was like August of 2022. So that would have been like 3 years ago. My math is hopefully mathing right. Yep.
Yeah.
So about three years ago, the person who was previously in my position, they moved to ADRA. And so Williams Costa Jr. asked me if I would consider taking the position. So I've been in it about 3 years. My primary responsibilities are ANN, so Adventist News Network, the publishing of all the news, whether it's video, website, social media. And I also helped oversee the social media channels of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. So at Adventist Church, wherever you go, in four languages. So those were kind of like my primary things that I focused on, although there was a lot of other random things that I also assisted with.
Yeah. So when I went onto Facebook or Instagram and I saw posts from the official Adventist Church, was that directly you usually making the post, or did you have a team that you just kind of guided and instructed, like, hey, this is our vision, this is what we're doing, that's kind of what you did?
Absolutely had a team, especially since we had four languages and I only speak one. It would be very bad if I was trying to create content in other languages. No, we have a great team. They've been kind of recruited from all over the world. So we have the global perspective. One of the things that I really focused on was trying to find younger content creators, because if we're trying to speak to an Instagram audience and you have like 50-year-olds writing for it, it just kind of felt like sometimes there's a disconnect.
Yeah.
So for Instagram, for instance, I found this young guy, he's from Jamaica, and I tried to find a lot of people. We talked a lot about what the vision is, what the purpose was of our channels, and most of our posts have been hits. There have been a few glitches in the matrix, we'll call it.
Yeah.
But for the most part, we've done a really good job of trying to convey hope and healing to the world.
Yeah. I remember one thing that I really respected was, I don't know if it was last year, maybe 2 years ago, because on Instagram, that's where usually Seeking What They Saw spends most of our time. It's kind of our home base for content and the news that we send out for episodes that are coming up or whatever else we're doing. And we followed the Adventist Church on there. I think one of the first memories I have is when we noticed that maybe 2 years ago, the Adventist Church Instagram had 144,000 followers. So we had to take advantage of that. We're like, wait a second, we've got to make some sort of meme out of that. So we had to highlight that. And that was a kind of a funny moment when the Adventist Church had that many followers on Instagram.
It was fun.
And then the second one, though, is, I remember, like you described, as a glitch, right? I don't even remember all of the details around it. I know that it had to do something about either marriage roles or male-female roles. And there was like a carousel post that was made. Might have even had some AI images too, which I know gets anyone in, you know, kind of in like, oh, wait, what are these conveying? But what I appreciated about that is I know that there was some feedback, you know, some negative feedback on the comments and other places about some of those posts on Instagram. And I remember pretty immediately, whether it was your direct words or someone else's, there was a quick thing said like, hey, this didn't achieve what we were trying to go for. And we, you know, there was that correction, and even just like putting out there like, hey, we plan to do better with this. We want to do better with this. What is that experience like for you? Just like going through that and seeing that feedback, because the internet can be a tough place. It can be brutal. What was that like going through, just as someone that is ahead of the people that make the content? What was it like in the GC, you know, when those, you know, that kind of thing happens, as rare as it might be?
Yeah, that was a really interesting experience for me. That was the first time I really took ownership of social media as being my thing. So it was a post about husband and wife kind of duties. It was based off content in Adventist Home, but we had tried to create like a quirky way of doing it, I guess you could say, where it was kind of like, here are things not to look for in a spouse. And we had done the husband version and had been really, really well received. And so there was like this outcry for like, can you do the wife? If I had known that it was coming, I would have known that there are certain things we can say, I'm just going to say it, about men that we cannot do the reverse for women.
Okay.
It just doesn't land well.
Right.
And so it went through the entire process. The writer was a woman. The proofreader was a woman. The person who approved it was a woman. And it got posted, and it immediately had a really large backlash.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I was actually traveling back from Tennessee the day it went live, and I got a text message from somebody in the general conference saying, what is going on? And so I took a look at this. I'm praying about this while I'm in the air. And I decide that I'm going to write a personal message. All the words on that apology post were mine.
Yeah.
I ran them past my daughter, because she is the younger generation who is watching this. I ran them past some non-Adventists that I know follow the account. So we tried to run it by a number of people to kind of gauge if they felt that this worked. And I remember telling them, I was like, I want to put my picture at the end. I want this to feel like this is a message from me and not just some like corporate speak kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And I remember everyone loved my statement, but when they saw the post, they were like, yeah, but do you want to put your picture? Like, let's take your picture off. Like, all of a sudden they got very protective. And I was like, no, I believe this is what this generation needs. They need authenticity from their leaders and being willing to admit when we kind of made some mistakes. I will say, when I went to bed that night, I went to bed before my carousel posted, and I went to bed with a very sinking feeling, and I was ready to wake up the next morning and know that I was going to be hit hard. And it wasn't. It was actually very affirming. And I do think it is because this is what the church kind of wants. This is what our young people want, is that authenticity. But it was I think that was my first time really kind of feeling like, oh no, like, you know, get yourself ready, you know, get your thick skin on, because you don't know what's going to happen next. But I wish it hadn't gone live, but I feel like we learned a lot by that experience. And while you can jump on some, you know, trends or some ideas, we still have to be very cautious with how we do it as a church.
Yeah, there's a lot we could unpack there. The main reason I brought it up was not to even put you in the hot seat to kind of speak to that. It was actually the opposite. I think in its own way, I want to affirm the way that you handled that was noticed. I remember that as a team, we had watched both sides unfold when it first happened. We were like, did you guys see this? What's going on here? You know, we had an interesting reaction, and everyone can have an initial reaction. Whenever you see a post or a news story, right? We all have our instant hot take on, you know, we kind of judge the situation before any of the nuance or background comes out. But then when we saw your follow-up post with the apology, it was like, whoa, this is not normal for what I was used to, or what any of us were used to experiencing within the Adventist leadership space, at least in a regular way. And so that kind of shocked us. And I noticed that similarly, like you said, the comments were, hey, this is refreshing. You know, like, there's space to make mistakes and have things that you know, people described it, whether it was tone deaf or not hitting the mark, miss the mark, whatever it may be. When looking at the response, though, it felt genuine. It felt heartfelt. The way you described it, that's how it did come across, which can be difficult to do on the internet. It can sometimes feel like, oh, it's, like you said, cold or corporate. But the way that you addressed it and the way that you had done that, it had hit a positive nerve, I think, within the Avenus community on Instagram and Facebook. And I think that that's the kind of stuff we want to see more of. So that's something even for us as teachers, pastors, it's constantly looking at how can we be those vulnerable leaders for the people in church, at school, and doing that even at a more local level. So again, I want to affirm you in what you did. I think it was necessary. It had a positive impact to the point where I think it even led to the way that I've heard people, and just in our experience talking with you, it does feel like a breath of fresh air for us to be able to talk to someone that wants to create opportunities for us to all get together and have a voice within Adventism, even if we don't see things eye to eye, or maybe we, you know, disagree on certain things. That has been helpful. So yeah, I want to say thank you. That created, I think, something of a tone shift for at least to a certain degree with how things are perceived. So I want to even get into, we just got back from the general conference session in St. Louis. That was my first time in St. Louis. I guess you were there probably the previous GC. That's when you were appointed the assistant role. But that was so interesting. That was my first GC. That was the first time I've ever been to any general conference session. And actually for Anthony and Jesse too, it's the first time that we've been at anything like that. You know, I don't even know what the total attendance was. I heard numbers like 100,000 being thrown out. I don't know if there's any official numbers out yet for the total attendance.
It's really hard to do this because like the second Sabbath, we believe there was about 40, 45,000.
Yeah.
But you have people who come just like one or two days, you know, during the middle of the week. You have people who are there on the weekend. So we had estimated that there could be a potential of up to 100,000 people through the entirety of the 10-day event.
Yeah.
Did we hit that? I don't know.
Hard to track.
We're still looking to, because there's not like you have to punch a ticket or register to come in.
Right.
So it makes it a little bit more challenging.
That actually surprised me. It almost in a way felt not informal. That's the wrong word. But being my first time, it's like, obviously they had the security gates at the entrance where they check your bags and everything. But beyond that, you just kind of, you get to walk around. Like if you're at a big, it's almost like a big mall. Like there's little, you know, spots to find food. There's the exhibit hall. You can go into the main conference area where they're doing business meetings or the worships. And it was just like, you're in. There's no admission. There's no, you know, way of checking that you're there. No reservations or anything like that.
It's supposed to be like a camp meeting. You know, it's just like a camp meeting with business kind of a thing.
Yeah,
so it's, you know, there's seminars happening throughout the day. There's youth impact projects. But yeah, I remember. So 2015 was the first time I actually attended a GC session. It was in San Antonio, Texas. I went with my family for 3 days. And I remember feeling the same way. It was like you just kind of like walk in. And it's like just you can kind of go anywhere you want and do anything you want to do. And it was a little weird. But I kind of like that we don't have to register or pay to come in.
Yeah. So our experience there was we had, you know, low commitment. We were just there for the first time. We had some fun with it. We went to the exhibit hall, networked with a lot of cool people, saw some people that listened. It was just a cool experience to be around so many different people that we either knew or we got to know through that experience. So that was just a great thing. Even getting to go into the media section, meeting some of the different media outlets and being in the business meetings themselves and part of that session as well. But for you, it was a very different experience because you were there and you got a job change, which happened to a bunch of people. That I can't imagine going to a big meeting like that with thousands of people around you and you just find out, oh, I have a new job, right? Like you went from assistant for the past 3 years to suddenly getting to a point where, oh, I have a new job. And what was that like? Like, was there any lead up the weeks, you know, leading up to GC where they give you like a little briefing, like, hey, just so you know, you're going to have a new job that they announce here at the GC at this meeting on this day. So just be ready for that. Have your best outfit ready. Be ready for a nice speech and for media outlets to come barrage you about your new role. Like, is that how it goes? Like, what is that like?
No. So I went to GC session not expecting this job change. And it was a really going into GC session, I was just focused on my job. So I was in charge of the global newsroom, which was the first time as a church we brought all of our communication people to work together in a united way. So divisions, mm-hmm. conferences, unions, whoever was there as a communicator, we all worked together to produce news. So this was kind of something I had been dreaming about for a long time. I like the idea of tearing down silos and bringing people together and using their gifts and talents. And so my focus for like the last 7-8 months had just solely pretty much been the global newsroom. And then on top of that, I kind of was like sending out emails to the external media that we were inviting, and just that was my world. And nobody talks to you about, like what would happen if. And I think, as far as I know, because I was an assistant director. An assistant director is an appointed position, not an elected position. So appointments happen often like October during annual council. So maybe there's something that they tell people who are already elected, like, hey, make sure you do this, make sure you do that. But I was not coming in a role that had previously served. So for me, I was just coming into GC session. I was doing my job and enjoying that job thoroughly, while being insanely busy every day, but just loving to bring together people. But no, there isn't this like, hey, just so you know, we're going to put your name forward, get ready. Like, that's not what's happening.
Yeah. So to you, it was a surprise. So there was just a point during the session. It went from July 3 to 13, right? So it was a 10-day event. And so you get there July 3rd, you don't really have a clue or a hint when you get there that this is going to be different by the end of the general conference session. It was just, what day was it during the conference that you found out, like, hey, something's going on, or you had a sense that things were about to change?
So the evening of June 7th, which is, I was elected on July 8th. Mm-hmm. And so the evening of June 7th, I was asked if my name was put forward, that they were wanting to put my name forward. And if they did, would I be willing to say yes? So they don't, you know, administration would not want to walk in, put somebody's name forward, have them be like, you know, put forward by the nominating committee. And then that person be like, yeah, no, I don't want the job. So if you are an elected official before GC session, so like anybody who's a director or an associate director of a department, you signed something ahead of time, I've been told, that says, would you be willing to continue to serve in your capacity? Mm-hmm. So if they check yes, they go to session, you get a call at some point, and they're like, come backstage. And so that's how you know that you have officially been moved forward. But for those of us who did not check something off, they did talk with us in advance to let us know that, you know, hey, are you willing to do this? And I still remember Elder Kohler, when he asked me, he kind of was just like ripped the Band-Aid off and kind of said, you know, this is what I'd like to call you for. And I just kind of remember sitting there like kind of stunned, because mm-hmm. I definitely had not come to GC session and seen this as a possibility at all. And I had about 2 hours to pray about it and give him my answer. And so I met with one of my mentors and my husband, and the three of us talked it through. We prayed for about an hour together. We talked about the challenges that I would face, the things that, because again, this is very unexpected. And so we kind of just did it. And then I called Elder Kohler and I told him that if my name was put forward and if the nominee committee decided to move it forward, that I would say yes, because I couldn't see it as anything else but the Holy Spirit at work. Because just like, there's no, like, I don't know if it's the first time. I'm going to guess it's the first time an assistant director has moved to the role of communication director. This is not like a typical jump.
Okay.
And, you know, sometimes like an associate might move up, or like a division director from, like, you know, in that kind of a realm. But I don't believe that, and I'm going to go research this, but I don't think an assistant director has jumped over associate to become the communication director. And so to me, just knowing that I've only been in GC communication for, you know, three and a half years, I think, in total, that this could be nothing but God working and speaking. And so I was going to just trust that if it went through, that I was actually being called. But I was terrified, just like absolutely terrified by the, like, a lot of people are like, oh, you must be so excited. I was like, the excitement didn't even really hit, I would say, until kind of like a week and a half later. And it's still tempered by the shock of it. I'm excited by the idea that God can use me, but I was terrified of the idea that he had seen fit to call me.
It's just so fascinating hearing you say that, as well as reading the story about Kohler's reaction too, because in some ways you guys can relate. Now, obviously different roles, but in the sense that Kohler described it, at least the way that I heard it at the press conference and other places, that it was a surprise to him. It moved very quickly. And there was that small window with his family. They got to go back and pray. And there was a lot of emotions that involved it. Kind of like, man, what, you know, almost still in shock. He described his wife and his daughter. I even think he described his daughter in the press conference saying, like, don't do it, Dad. Like, it's going to be so overwhelming and a lot. Like, very honest human emotions, right? I can't imagine being a child looking up at your dad, like, suddenly, boom, like, you've got a couple hours to make this huge decision to be, for all intents and purposes, the face of Adventism. You know, that's not, you know, we're not saying that's how it should be or whatever, but a lot of ways that's a very influential, just people look to you and see and react online, at conferences, at sermons. They react to see what you're going to have to say. And it's a very difficult role in that way. And he acknowledged that, right? He said, this was, I'm not going in, you know, because it's easy, right? He knew the heavy burden that that space could bring upon him and his family. So I can't imagine, but you to some degree can, because you went through in your own space that quick turnaround. I'm just curious to speak on that. How do you feel about that process? Do you feel like the way that the Adventist Church is set up to appoint leaders in those kind of areas, is that a good system? Do you find that that's the best? You know, I know that you're not an expert on, you know, creating structures for employment, but that just seems overwhelming to me to have it that way. Do you feel like that's the best way to do things and operate?
I can't say that I think it's the best way. I think it might deserve to be kind of looked at a little bit more carefully.
Sure.
One of the things that, like, I think is a challenge is that when you were elected, it's like instantaneous. So, like, I became the communication director and my boss stopped being the communication director.
My goodness.
And I immediately reached out to Williams and Sam. You know, I let them know. I was like, hey, guys, like, we're just going to keep doing the roles that we came here doing. Like, I'm not, you know, I need you guys. And I really appreciate the fact that I was told that in the past, that's how a lot of leaderships transition. I think some departments, they're not like as busy during GC session as others. Like, we're all busy, don't get me wrong. But like communication is clearly like going nonstop, secretariat going nonstop. So there's like a lot of departments where it's like every day, all day long, you have to be going. So I do appreciate that as a general rule, with that change of leadership, you offer the space for everyone to kind of finish their jobs. And I had heard that story in the past. And so I wanted to make sure that I had echoed that, you know, to my predecessors. But I want to talk about something that you mentioned a few minutes ago. And it was about the family, the impact on family. So I'm a mom of three young adults / teenagers. And I feel it when we talk about the sacrifice on a family.
Yeah.
My children did not sign up for this job. You know, Elder Kohler's family did not sign up to be the president's children. And one, our children are going to read stuff that is written about us that is sometimes written from a place of ignorance, sometimes from spite, sometimes from not knowing the whole picture. And that is really hard on families. I know Elder Wilson and Nancy spoke to this. This is something that our families struggle with. And I don't think we think about, it's not just the burden of leadership that's been placed on my shoulders or Elder Kohler's shoulders or any of the other people elected. It's that same burden that's been placed on our family. One of the things that I've tried to allow my children to do is to be who they want to be and to figure out their own journey and create their own space. And I've tried to support that. But I do get this concern now, like, what if somebody sees my child doing something? And that, like, and I feel that burden as a mother now that like, and so I had to reaffirm to them, nothing changes. I'm the person who was elected. And so I just want to like remind people in this space that our families, they support us in our journey, but they are human. And when they read things, it impacts them greatly. Whether it's righteous indignation or like sadness, like we feel all the same emotions that everybody else feels. And we struggle through that.
Yeah. I think it's an important point to make because it can be easy again, like we mentioned before with that post that was made on social media, you know, there's to immediately go and jump to like, man, these people are so tone deaf. They don't know what they're putting out. It's so hurtful. How can they do this? It's like, it's so easy on again, the internet mostly to react, to be reactionary instead of reflective and see big picture. Because that there's a lot we could unpack that for a long time, because number one, reactionary stuff tends to get more clicks or views and therefore more money. So even if someone has the foresight to know, oh, this is more nuanced, you put out the clickbait stuff because that's what gets the views, right? And someone that's in social media, you know how that works. You know that there's an algorithm to kind of worship at their altar to make it happen. And I'm to a certain degree aware of that as well, since we make and create content as well. We're aware of that space, but you're always, you know, towing that line of, are you still with integrity in what you are as an entity or organization or what you're trying to put out, while also trying to stay with modern times and work around those things. And it's tough. Like in journalism, that's a hard, you know, beyond the Adventist Church, that's a constant battle of how to, you know, stay in business, but also maintain your integrity of what you're trying to do and be ethically, you know, ethical in what you do. And so that is tricky, right? Because we want to be able to call out our leaders when we do think there's something wrong, that we do think there's a change or something should be called out, but also knowing how to do that lovingly. How do we, especially in the Adventist world as a Christian, how do we do that responsibly, respectfully in a Christ-like way that is both, you know, willing to be bold when needing to be bold, but also being respectful and aware how this can affect humans that are in these positions. So I don't have easy answers for that, Alyssa, but I do think what you speak to is valuable for us to at least pause and remember that when things are being put out there, think about what is the consequence of that. So I think that is important.
And I just want to say, like, when it comes to like social media of our church or something, like, you know me now, you have my number, you can text me. That's how we set this up. Like, if you saw something, just reach out to me. You know, I think a lot of times, like a lot of people who even commented on the posts, like they were friends of mine. Like they even knew it was my job. And they forgot, though, that there were humans behind it. And I just tell people, just reach out to me. Like that way I know about stuff quicker. And I'm very much about having that kind of a relationship, having that interaction between people. And I'm always willing to take a look at something. And if something is wrong, I want to fix it. Like, even if I don't, like, people want me to take it down, they don't want you to take it down, whatever. We have a way that we internally decide what we do with that situation. But to me, it's like, just reach out. Just talk to me. Because I want to do better for the church. I want the very best for our church.
Yeah, for sure. I know that, you know, in my role as a teacher too, I have to interact with parents, students, and there is that challenge, right, of knowing how to create, you know, a kind heart and building relationship when there's disagreement, when there's something that happens, right? Conflict resolution is challenging. I know there's a verse in Matthew, I don't have it pulled up now, that just talks about this order. Like if you have a, you know, paraphrasing, if you've got a beef with someone, like go to them in private first, right? If you can work this out, do it one-on-one, right? Human to human, before you just blow it up into the world. And that is very countercultural today. Like if you talk about cancel culture, it immediately jumps to how can we make this as public and as inflammatory as possible versus what is the best sequence of events to resolve this in a meaningful way? And I think the Bible speaks to a way that we interact as brothers and sisters in Christ that is different from the way that the world does that. And I think that should translate to journalism, to media, to leadership, right? It goes both ways. So I appreciate the way that you brought that up. I'm curious though, Alyssa, with this new role, how much is staying the same for you? Like, are you still doing primarily stuff with social media, Avenus News Network? How much has changed in terms of what is different about now what you're responsible for?
Well, in the whole week that I've been back, right now is a very interesting situation. I called an associate director, Samuel Hill from Spain. So he doesn't actually start working with me until his visa is processed. So I likely won't have an associate for 4 to 6 months. I also have to replace myself at the assistant director role. So right now, and then the other assistant director we have, he currently lives in England. So I'm kind of like one person trying to fill those other three roles at this time. Yeah. So I will have to continue making sure that ANN keeps going. Fortunately, we have a great team of contractors who helps us with that, again, with social media. So I will continue to kind of manage all of that. But now I have to start thinking bigger. So I'm not going to be managing the day to day. I need to start thinking more visionary, more strategic. So I did spend last week trying to figure out, you know, what are some areas that my predecessors had started that we want to finish. I met with communication leaders and media center directors while I was at GC session to kind of, you know, get from them, like, what are things that you would love to see from us moving forward? How can we better support our divisions? And we want to be able to create content, or we want to create stuff that's actually used by the local levels. Like, there's no point in me creating something and then division's like, yeah, nobody needs it. You know, the division shouldn't be creating something and the unions are like, ah, nobody needs this. Like, we need to work in a more strategic way together. So I think that's probably one of the things I'm going to focus on the most is, like, how can we work in a more integrated manner? How can we work to support all the way down to the local level better? Not that the GC will reach down to the local level, but that through the structure that we have, we can best support the local level. So I would say that that's one thing. The other thing that, like, came fast and furious was that now I am in charge of all the finances for the department. And so following GC session, there was a lot of invoices that needed to be paid. So I was starting to process that and just kind of working through that, trying to figure out all the accounts. So there's just a lot of things that you don't think about. This morning, we started the process of transferring accounts that we pay for from one person's credit card to my credit card. So it's like little things that people don't necessarily think about, but have to be done. So just, I think there's a lot of that. But I think the part I am the most excited about is thinking more on the strategy vision level and how we can best create this, like, tearing down of silos, finding ways to integrate, which is what we did in the global newsroom. But how do we make this not just be an every 5 year thing? And how do we make this be something that is duplicated and replicated on all levels of the church? And so I would say that's kind of like what I've, in my last week, I've been doing this. That's kind of where I've been at.
Working within the GC, do you, a lot of times, and I think I said this to you before, a lot of times the GC comes across as this distant corporate space, right? We don't see the faces there. And you spoke to that. There are humans working there. But also, just as you said, your vision is to create that connection, that relationship that may not have been there to a full extent previously. What is it like being on the inside? Do you just in your office space, even before all of this, are you just like down the hall from Ted Wilson and like the people working there, Mark Finley, like the people that are in the building, are you just around them that you can just go have a, you know, cup of decaf coffee with, because we wouldn't have caffeinated coffee. You would sit Early there with them and, yeah. Would you just go and, like, you could talk to the leaders of the church there? Or how is it set up in the GC in that space?
So, well, there's three floors. I'm on the second floor. Most of our departments are on the second floor. I will say, though, I've had a lot of great interactions with our leadership. So I've been at the GC. Previously, I was with Adventist World Radio before I moved to GC Communication. And I actually really loved the culture that is there. So the problem is a lot of people are traveling a lot. So it's hard to find our time to sit down with our decaf coffee and to just be able to hang out. But I know that, for instance, Elder Wilson and Nancy Wilson would open their home up like once or twice a year for the spouses of people who have transitioned to the GC. And we would be able to spend this time with them. I remember him clearing dishes. He would ask me if he could get me more soup. It felt really weird. And my parents got in a car accident a few years ago. And I remember he sent a video message greeting to them. He remembers their names, like even up until like one of the last times we talked, he asked me how Janice and Bill were doing. So one of the things I always really appreciate about Elder Wilson is when he talked to you, you really felt like he was just talking to you. You never felt rushed with him. I've had a lot of great mentors in the building, and I've been able to talk with them and just, you know, work one-on-one with them. So I feel like for the most part, if you want to put yourself out there and you want to create those relationships, it's not hard to do. And we're all there for the same purpose, the same mission, and we just have to kind of find ways to connect. I will say that I've been really privileged. I know a lot of people, I'm going to bring up the woman card here. A lot of people talk about, like, you know, being a woman at the GC, it must be hard. I never felt like when I was invited to be on a committee or something, that I was like a token female. I have always felt that I was there because they saw me as competent. And I've never felt that any man at the GC made me feel like less than because I was a female. And I actually want to publicly state that, because I feel like there's a perception sometimes that is out there. And I've actually been very grateful for my experience there. And I have felt, even though I'm youngish, I'm going to go with youngish. I'm youngish, I'm female. Like, I've never felt like I was a token at a table. I recognize that often I was the only female at that table, but I wasn't there because of that. And I've never felt like that I wasn't respected. As long as you do your job and you're competent, people respect competency.
Yeah. Because you brought that up, I was interested in just getting your perspective, because when it was announced that you were moving on up into the director, the full role for the communication department, there were some news outlets that did look at and say, in a celebratory way, like, yeah, you're a female leader in the church. You were already there, but now you're in a very influential, high up role, and even looked at some other departments where they saw female leadership as well within the GC, such as, I know there's one vice president that is a female, and she was already in that role and is continuing that role with the 2025 GC session as well. Do you feel like that, just knowing that is being talked about and your name is associated with kind of this movement of at least part of Adventism that is wanting to see more female leadership, that is looking to see if there will be more leadership within Adventism. Do you like being associated with that? Do you feel like, I don't want to necessarily put my name to a cause, so to speak, whether you want to call it politics or not? You know, women's ordination has been a hot topic for a very long time within our church. So whether it's at a pastoral level or a leadership level, that has been something that's talked about a lot. How do you feel about that, being associated with that, you know, like a win for that side, so to speak?
So I have mixed feelings. One, I want to bring up a couple points. So Elder Kohler, in his very first press conference, he spoke to the fact that he would like to see more women in leadership. So I think he's already wanting, you know, he's trying to do what he can. But again, not because Nestle were women. The worst thing we could have for women is to put incompetent women in leadership. Because if we just go there based on our gender, it's actually going to throw us years behind. Right. So I did read the articles that were out, and it felt a little awkward. But I think the thing is that I'm happy to be here on behalf of over half of our denomination's membership. The amount of messages I had from women immediately afterward, especially women communicators, just saying how this gave them so much hope. I recognize for a lot of women that this was a very meaningful thing to them. But I also don't love when we put a gender to it, because then it could come across as the reason why you're elected is because you are a woman, not because you're competent, but because you're a woman. And, you know, I was talking to Crystal Ward, who was brought in as an associate ministerial secretary. She's the first female pastor to be placed in this. Mm. And neither of us want to be there because of our gender, but we also recognize that our gender makes an impact on us being there. So I want to talk more about the competence than my gender, while also not disregarding it, because we represent over half of our church and we understand how important this moment is to them at the same time. So it's kind of like a double-edged sword. It's like, you don't know which one to feel. But I think that would be how I would look at it.
Yeah, I think that's a balanced approach. I think that you are approaching that in a healthy way, because I know that many would find it to be a lot of pressure, not only just the role itself, disregarding gender, right? You're in a big role, and it came upon you very quickly. We talked about that. But on top of that, there is this layer of, whether you call it expectation or hope, that, oh, she's got an opportunity to really use this as a chance to show the world church or whatever, you know, have these lofty goals of, we've got to change the way that we look at, you know, theology when it comes to women's ordination or some other, you know, they're attaching you to things that may not be fair to what God has called you just to do in your space. And maybe as a byproduct, that can happen, right? Maybe with time, when people see the impact you've already made at the GC, but then continue to make, they can see, yeah, we need people of both genders in high leadership. We need them in these different roles so that we can continue to serve the church in all aspects and areas of the church, instead of making it this political divide. But that's a hard thing to do. That's to navigate those waters in a healthy way and trying to reach over to different sides of the aisle. It's a headache to try and do that. So I think what you described is staying focused on your role, which I think is the best thing to do, is just push forward with what God's called you to do.
So I want to kind of speak a little bit more to this. I think I want to acknowledge the fact that generally, if a man fails, he fails. But when a woman messes up, it kind of throws women under the bus, which is a little more challenging. So I do feel the weight of being a woman very heavily.
Yeah.
And I feel the weight of being younger very heavily. We are like kind of like this next generation of leadership that's coming in. And a lot of people are like, it doesn't matter what other people think, and it doesn't matter. And it's like, it's true. Like, I truly believe that it is God who called me. Like, completely believe it. But that doesn't mean there's not this struggle in our humanness to want to not fail because of being a woman or because of being young. And every day since I have been elected, I have prayed that God will take that off my mind. He will take that burden off and just allow me to do what he wants me to do. Because when I think about it, it's actually even more overwhelming to me.
Yeah,
I don't want to let women down. I don't want to let this younger generation down. I want to do what needs to be done. But I realize what I really need to do is just listen to the Holy Spirit. And if I follow what he does, I won't let them down. But there is that human component. It's that struggle, the devil constantly putting in your mind, you know, these other thoughts. In all transparency, last week I was driving home feeling completely overwhelmed, and I wondered, if it would be too late for me to contact Elder Kohler and tell him that this felt too overwhelming. And no. I know it was the devil trying to put these thoughts in my head, you know, but honestly, at the same time, I'm glad I have those feelings. I'm glad that I don't feel like I'm so brilliant at this that I don't need to rely on the Holy Spirit. You know, I would be much more concerned if we had these directors coming in who were just like, yeah, I got this. You know, I should have been here years ago. Like, I'm grateful that there is a sense of reliance on the Holy Spirit. And I'm, you know, meeting with, like, I reached out to some former communication directors. I'm reaching out to different people. And I want them to talk to me about their experience, things that they felt were challenges, what they see as suggestions for how I can, like, navigate this in the future. And I want to bring in my team that can pray for me, give me mentorship and wisdom. I can't do this alone. I know I can't do this alone, but I absolutely know that I can do it.
Yeah. Wow. When you say it that way, it gives me hope, because I did hear that. Both from you, I can see that the way that you describe it from you, but I also see it in at least the initial impression I get from Kohler too. I remember he described a similar experience of, there's a lot I don't know. There's a lot I'm going to have to learn on the job and really trust God's Spirit. Like it just has to be Him. And I saw some of that humility in the way he spoke about it. And again, I don't know him. I don't know, again, you know, what's going to happen over the coming years. But at least initially, that did give me hope and encouragement, because the leaders that I have spoken to that have had similar hearts behind that, almost, you know, it's such a deeply humbling, but also a little bit overwhelming. I think it shows a healthy amount of trust in God to be, I don't want to word it this way, but not to say you're overwhelmed, but to know so clearly that it can't be you. That you just have to be like, God, if this is where you want me to be, you're going to have to show me, because I see no way through this on my own. That deep sense of humility that you just described, time and time again, I've seen that lead to some of the biggest success in leadership, because they're so willing to listen to others, whether it's on their team, locally, and to continue to innovate, be adaptive, and be respectful of the people they're serving, the people they've been appointed to serve. And it's that kind of constant reminder. So yeah, I'm really encouraged by the way that you described your process. And thank you for being honest about that. I can't imagine still the emotions that you have, let alone last week, just going through all of this. So I'm just curious, when you look at the future of our church, how do you, from your role, and where you have been, do you feel optimistic? I know that there's a lot of challenges. I know there's a lot of goals that you have, and you're going to continue to set in your role for what you want to see from your department, from within the GC. Do you feel hopeful about where our church is headed at large?
So to answer that question, I want to take you back to the last Sabbath at GC session. So they let all of the directors know that we were going to sit on the stage. So we were all sitting there. And I remember listening to Elder Kohler's sermon. And multiple times during that sermon, I got absolute goosebumps. I have been raised an Adventist. I'm like many, many, many generations of Adventism. James White had encouraged one of my great, 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 whatever grandfathers to build a church. I was in Central New York, where Adventism, like, you know, kind of was birthed out of, like, the Sabbath conferences were held down the street. So, like, this is just in my genetics. And I remember growing up always being very fearful of the last days. And it was a very scary thing. And I've had to work through a lot of that emotion. And as a mother, I can't say that I've always taught it to my children in the most healthy way. I've tried to do a little bit better, but it was just, I think, kind of like the culture at that time. And I remember, as I was listening to his sermon, just the utter hopefulness that I felt for the future. I loved where he said, like, a hopeless world is desperately in need of a hope-filled church. And he talked about tearing down silos and bringing all of the generations together. And to me, I'm actually getting goosebumps. Yeah. Just like even recounting this, it was the message that my 14-year-old heart, my 24-year-old heart, like, it was the message that, like, gave me so much hope. And if anybody who was not there or who has not heard the sermon, I want you to head over to ANN afterward, find that last Sabbath sermon. To me, it was his vision of the next 5 years. And I easily felt at the end of this, and this, I think up until this point, I was still struggling through all of the emotion and processing everything that happened. And I got to the end of that sermon and I said, I cannot wait for the next 5 years. All of a sudden, my role took on a different meaning. Everything felt like it had come alive. And to end with the hallelujah chorus, which I'd sung in high school, and I was up there totally singing my second soprano part through the whole thing. It just felt like this ultimate call to action. Like, we are here and we are going to stay, you know, firmly grounded in God's word, but focused on mission. And I feel hope. I feel excitement for the future of our church. And it doesn't mean that we as leaders are going to hit everything like as a home run. There are going to be some misses over the next 5 years. There are going to be some things that people are going to question. That's okay. And I think we need to be able to have this friendly dialogue, this discussion with each other. We are supposed to hold leaders accountable. I do think that there is a good and ethical way to do so. We don't have to do it sensationalistically. We're going to go with that word. Or to make it clickbait. And but I, as an Adventist, forget being a communication director. As an Adventist, I felt hope. As a communication director, I could not wait to convey that hope to the world.
Wow. Yeah, I felt a similar way, like hearing his sermon. I wasn't there in person. We had to leave before the last Sabbath, but I did pull it up. The Sabbath that he gave that sermon. And again, like I told you, it felt like a tone shift. And I've noticed it in other pockets, though, too, which is what made it feel believable is that's the big thing here is it's not just Kohler, right? And it's not even just the GC. We are a whole church family. And I see it from the seminary to local pastors, and now even within GC leadership, that there is a change in tone that feels like we're gaining some momentum. And again, there's things to deal with. There's challenges we still face. There are questions still to be answered, concerns that I know we've had for many years. But I would say that as a whole, when we talk as a team, because we've been going since 2018, we've had some concerns. There's times that we've watched annual councils or we see something that was put out and we're like, man, is this really what we're about? Is this going to lead us in a direction that we feel missionally is what Jesus wants us to do? And I feel like over the past few months and even last few years, there has been a change just for me personally, but also on our team where we're like, yeah, we're in this. Let's keep going. Let's see what God's going to do here, because we see something happening. So I'm excited. I want to see what happens in the future. Alyssa, I'm excited. And as our team, just on behalf of our team, we're excited. We're thankful that you reached out to us, that we can be part of that same team where we do want to see our church living by the Spirit, where we can come together. We have differences, right? We don't see everything eye to eye. We just want to learn alongside the rest of everyone. How do we do that in a way that brings us together? When we talk about that big U word, unity, I know that's kind of a buzzword. It's one that even has caused some divide in our church. What does unity actually look like? That might be a whole other conversation we need to have, is just what is unity within the Adventist church. But I am hopeful like you, and I appreciate the role that you're in. I'm appreciative of the way you've articulated to me what your vision is, how you intend to continue to go for these next 5 years. So yeah, thank you for being vulnerable, being willing to come on. And I know that you're plenty busy, so thank you for making the time to be here and just share your thoughts. So we might need to catch up in the coming months, years, and just see how things are going. And I'm sure there'll be plenty of news and things that are happening within the church that we need to talk about. So yeah, thank you, Alyssa.
Thank you for having me. And absolutely. you know, when I'm not a week out from having a job and I have a little more of a firm grasp on everything, I would love to be able to come back and talk with you guys.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Alyssa.
Hey, friends. You've just been listening to another episode of Seeking What They Sought. I'm one of your hosts, Anthony Leiter, and on behalf of all the guys, we just want to say a big thank you to all of you who have come alongside us in our journey to have honest conversations about Adventism. We appreciate each one of you. As usual, if you haven't already, give us a follow on Instagram. It is kind of like our home base, social media-wise. And if you'd like to stay up to date on the episodes that we're posting or just different things that we're doing, you can follow us there. We're also kind of like low-key a meme account, and we post silly videos and other stuff. So give us a follow. We would love it. Also want to say a big thank you to our patrons, and we're really grateful to each one of you for helping us make quality content. So to each one of you, a big thank you. And if you'd like to follow us on Patreon, you can. There's a link in our Instagram bio if you'd like to support us. Thank you so much. Last but not least, if you could you leave us a review on iTunes or Spotify, wherever you listen, because it really helps us actually in the algorithm to help new people get their eyes on the podcast. So if you could just go in, give us a little, hopefully a 5-star review, but you know, be honest, that really helps us just in the algorithm, the way that, you know, these things work these days. So we really, really appreciate it. All right, I think that's it for now, friends. So we will see you next time on Seeking What They Sought.